We're not afraid to say it. Merry Christmas. Welcome back to the KVI Christmas Spectacular.
Every year around the holiday season is when the inevitable conversation comes up, what is a Christmas movie? I do find it entertaining that some people are taking my advice on this, given the fact that I am the only Jew around here and I get to decide what's a Christmas movie, what's not. Now, mind you, there are inherent flaws.
You could have tie-breaking votes on this.
Indeed. There are inherent flaws with my formula with this, where I say, well, what makes a Christmas movie is Christmas essential to the plot? Like, for example, Die Hard, no Christmas, no Nakatomi takeover, no terrorists. Mike has pointed out on multiple occasions, however, that that actually removes a whole bunch of Christmas movies from the world.
Yeah.
For the category, I should say.
It's a Wonderful Life, no longer a Christmas movie.
because
Christmas is not a strong component of the plot. That story could happen anytime.
I'm okay with that.
And with it being wraparounds, I mean, there's Christmas at the beginning and the end. Same thing with a little movie I'd like to call White Christmas. You know how much Christmas takes place in White Christmas? Not a lot.
Fine.
Yeah.
I'm with Ari. I stick to the formula.
Yes. For example, Die Hard for Kids, otherwise known as Home Alone. If there's no Christmas vacation, family's not going away, no Home Alone doesn't happen.
Bingo.
So there's lots of movies. That's my classification. But then again, I should get to, I don't know, take somebody else's culture. I shouldn't get to do that. That's cultural appropriation. Phil, you got a favorite?
My culture is not your costume.
Yes, Phil, you got a favorite Christmas movie?
I kind of go towards the irreverent. So I don't get into the sentimental when it comes to the pop culture. Maybe a little bit with the music, but certainly not with the movies. And I was just kind of scribbling down some of mine. Elf would be the easy one. The classic 1983 Christmas story. But you know what also makes my list? Bad Santa.
Absolutely.
So, like I said, a little irreverence.
You know, Phil, if you hadn't brought that up, I would have. Let's do some Bad Santa legislation. Do you have a preferred version that you and your friends watch?
I saw it in the movie theater, so that's okay. The only version I've seen. So if they've come up with director's cuts or anything like that, I haven't gone down that
Phil,
path.
Phil, I'm going to blow your damn mind here. So for all of you hanging out, Landman himself, Billy Bob Thornton, is the titular Bad Santa. He's a no-goodnik. He's a safe cracker who's like, you know, casing a joint in the mall, playing a mall Santa, and irreverence and crass humor and raunchiness ensues. But there are no fewer than three different official versions of this. Yeah. There's the theatrical cut, which you enjoy. Mm-hmm. There's also a longer, raunchier, unrated cut, also known as Badder Santa, which is my preferred version. It's 10 minutes longer and way nastier. There's also a director's cut that is the shortest of the three versions and has actually a more melancholy, morose tone. It has like a more
morose.
Dour. Yeah, it's dour.
Well,
it's dour.
Mr. Thesaurus out here.
Well, hey, I'm a Bad Religion fan. I can't help it.
Let me bring this back to the criteria. The reason I was even interested in this movie in the first place was because John Ritter was in it. And I've always had a lifelong appreciation for John Ritter, going back to the Three's Company stuff, and his type of comedy always cracked me up. And when this movie came out, that was one of the things that made me want to go see it. And I know that he and Billy Bob Thornton were together
on Sling Blade.
You go. And so that was really the reason I wanted to see it. And he plays this, you know, mild mannered guy and Bad Santa to kind of play against type, to be the straight man to all the other irreverence and things like that. But that was why I put that one on my list.
If you're talking about irreverent Santa, I mean, Mike, our new holiday classic, Violent Night, that came out just a few years ago, Die Hard with Santa Claus. And Home Alone, too. You put them all together. It's all in one movie. It really is. I love that movie.
I'm partial to The Grinch.
You don't say.
Of course you are. Can't imagine why.
A little while back.
Makes money at the box office and for Zach.
Yeah, a little while back, I stumbled into an auction in which I bought. Y'all know the first scene in The Grinch where the teenagers knock on the cave door and the dog pushes out the fake monster deal?
Yes.
For this exercise, we'll have to say yes, but otherwise, no.
And specifically, I'm talking about the 2000 Jim Carrey Grinch.
Yes.
Well, there's a scene in that movie. You've probably seen it, and whether or not you remember it, I bought one of the costumes of the teenagers at auction for a price that I thought was low and my family thought was far too high. And I ended up making a little money when I sold it. But I was in possession of this. I think I'm like one of three people to ever own it publicly.
It's funny the text that we got when you sold
it. And I bought it, and then it took about a month to get here, and I brought it in. I showed a rare case of self-restraint, and I waited until I got into work, and we all opened it together, and I tried it on, which the owner's probably hearing and wishes I didn't do that. New owner. But, yeah, it's fun. It kind of fit. It was fun. It's all this crazy Grinch Whoville
goofy,
nonsense.
Yeah, goofy looking thing. Yeah,
but I like the movie regardless.
I forget. Is it Stu Lou Who or Drew Lou Who? Which Lou Who were you?
I was the proud owner of Drew Lou Who.
Drew Lou Who.
Which is Cindy Lou Who's older brother.
There you go. Not to be confused with Drew Hill. That's somebody else entirely.
He's in the film for about 30 seconds.
But we made so much fun of you about that, and you got to make fun of all of us.
Yeah,
because
the minute it sold, I sent that screenshot to everybody. But honestly, we're watching this movie the other night, and even my wife looked at the screen and was like, God, that's kind of cool. And I will never watch that movie the same way again.
Yes. Mike, how about you? Got a favorite?
Well, Phil already stole my Bad Santa, but I got another slightly offbeat contemporary one called Four Christmases. This is one with Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon, and they're basically both children of divorced parents. And anybody who has had to do the holiday, let's visit all of our various families and have various dinners and like having to like ration your appetite and stuff, there's a lot that really connects with me. It's the movie isn't particularly good, but the kind of overall messaging and premise really resonated with me. I think the two leads are compelling and charming enough. I especially like Robert Duvall as Vince Vaughn's dad. He's like very much like a grizzle hard apple type of dad. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's not particularly irreverent. It's not especially sentimental, but it's kind of fun. My wife and I get a kick out of it.
So what's funny is, as you're saying this movie sounds right up my alley. I love these movies.
I'm surprised you've never heard of this, honestly.
I haven't, but there's this movie called Bye Bye Love that came out right around the time my parents were getting divorced with Paul Reiser and Matthew Modine and Randy Quaid. And for some reason, I love that stupid movie because of what happened with my parents and stuff. So this movie actually sounds like it's right in my wheelhouse. And you just said the key word, Robert Duvall. I will see anything that guy is in.
The judge himself.
I love that movie. My wife the other day, she says to me, Ari, what are your top three movies? And I say, my top three movies of all time, Back to the Future, Braveheart, Die Hard, right? And she goes, what if somebody asked you for number four? And I said, The Judge, because that's my number four. And she said to me, she was flying to Israel recently, and she watched the movie to see what I saw in it. And she goes, that is a good movie. Yeah. What else you got, Phil?
Well, I was going to try and chime in on the Vince Vaughn part. I've always been a big fan of Vince Vaughn, so I'm going to have to start looking for Four Christmases based on that.
I think I sold my friends a Four Christmases. I love it.
The other movie that I would probably jump in on to be more sentimental would be Polar Express. And
yeah.
I remember getting that book when I was younger, and then they finally came out with the movie that sort of followed on the book. And
I'm learning right now there's animation. A gap between the book and the movie, a time gap.
Yeah, but the animation turned out incredible for Polar Express.
No, it did not.
No,
it did not.
You didn't like it? You thought it was too creepy?
It has not aged well at all. So. That's why I can't watch that movie back. It looks awful. It looks like a bad video game.
So what would
never been a stumbling block for
what
me.
What would you pick instead, Zach? You got anything else aside from The Grinch?
I don't know. I mean, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh.
Stirs people up.
My wife loves that one.
Yeah.
My brother loves that movie. Yeah. It's one of his all-time favorite movies. There's the little characters all over his house.
The only time I don't like it for Christmas is if we just watched it on Halloween. It gets a little too... A Gen Z attention span movies that back-to-back.
You beat me to it because I was going to say, like, this is almost like reverse Die Hard legislation. Is The Nightmare Before Christmas a Christmas movie, or is it a Halloween movie?
Mm-hmm. It's both.
Because I think it's a Halloween movie more than it's a Christmas movie,
Disney
ironically
thinks
enough.
It's both, because they switch over the Haunted Mansion.
That is true.
To The Nightmare
Before.
And I got to say, I was supremely disappointed, because I didn't want The Nightmare Before Christmas. I wanted The Haunted Mansion, and then I get all that stuff when I went there. Kids enjoyed it, though. Whatever. It was fun. It was good. Okay. Well, we got a whole lot more to discuss as our special Christmas.
Well, wait a second. Are we not going to talk about Die Hard? Is that a whole second segment?
That's a whole other thing if we want to go down the Die Hard rabbit hole.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do that next.
You know, we'll do that next. Okay. When we come back, a whole lot more, part of our special Christmas edition on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
More holiday cheer is coming your way. The KVI Christmas Spectacular continues right after this. Welcome back to the KVI Christmas Spectacular.
The controversy for our age is Die Hard a Christmas movie. This is Ari Hoffman. I'm Phil Vandervoort. We got our producers, Big Mike and Zach Wildfang, all with us here. We're kind of continuing along what we're talking about with Christmas movies, favorite Christmas movies. And now we get to the nitty gritty. Die Hard as a Christmas movie. I will start with Ari.
Of course it's a Christmas movie.
Right?
We're going all the references, it opens with Christmas music. There's sleigh bells everywhere. But the most important thing, if it's not Christmas, Hans Gruber does not take over the Nakatomi Tower Christmas party. And if there's no Christmas party, then they're not coming in there to take over the Nakatomi Tower, to break the seven locks, which gets you into the vault, which has the billions of dollars in negotiable bearer bonds that Hans Gruber wants to sit on a beach earning 20% after he steals.
Exactly. It's a crime of opportunity. What's the opportunity? Christmas.
Exactly. Yes. Now, you might say, wait a second. Are you sure this movie actually happens on Christmas? Because who has their holiday party on Christmas? But yes,
it's a little unorthodox.
Right. Normally you have the holiday party before, or some weird cases after, but you do have that. But yes, it turns out it is Christmas because they're all saying Merry Christmas to each other. They're all saying it's Christmas. These are things happening on the movie. And we know for sure the second one is happening on Christmas Eve too. Yeah. Zach, you look like you have something to add.
No,
I was going to say, yeah.
Zach's fully on team.
I just
Ari.
Thought it had already been yeah, I mean, you sold me. I hung the yippee-ki-yay yeah, mother,
did.
Nothing
right
below.
Behind me there.
Right behind
By the way, my Jewish
studio.
Family, including my father, the rabbi, got a huge kick out of that being up in my studio because it's Die Hard theme. They did enjoy that.
So here's where I come in on this, off of the top rope. I don't dispute that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, given all of the strong case that Ari makes. I mean, there's one of Phil's favorite holiday songs in there, obviously, as right. well. But where I start to bristle is when people have a postmodern take of not only is Die Hard a Christmas movie, Die Hard is the best Christmas movie.
And that's the problem. And
I wouldn't say that.
You have said that.
Well, it's because I don't like the Christmas holiday itself, but I would say I think Home Alone is a better Christmas movie
sure.
than Die Hard.
Here's
is.
The inverse of that argument that I was going to make, too. Let's take any Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Indisputably, Christmas movies.
Sure.
Doesn't mean they're good, but they're
sure.
Christmas
sure.
movies. And in the same vein, Die Hard, it might be one of the best movies. Doesn't mean it's the best Christmas movie.
Oh, I would
but
agree.
But it's certainly a Christmas movie. Doesn't need to top the charts on your, you know... I think the debate over whether or not it's a Christmas movie is what drives people to get bristly.
Yeah, yeah.
And
bristled,
also,
pushback.
Because I'm justifying why Die Hard is a Christmas movie with my formula.
Sure.
And that's my odd formula where it has to contribute, the plot has to contribute to it, and Christmas has to be part of the plot. It doesn't necessarily negate other things that people have decided,
doesn't
hey, I want to watch
this. Doesn't mean
that's
a movie that puts you in the Christmas
right,
spirit. It just means it qualifies.
This is just why it qualifies, right. I think, is that. Yes.
I will also remind the court that this movie was released in July of 1988 during the summer movie. It's a summer movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's an action thriller. It's got a lot of violence and not necessarily a whole lot of holiday vibes. It's got like holiday adjacent vibes, sure. But let me throw this out there as well. This office party could happen any other time also. It
yes.
just happened to be at Christmas, which again is the engine that makes it go. But I will throw one last bit of evidence in the no camp. At the Comedy Central roast of Bruce Willis. They asked,
this is the source you're going to cite?
Who else would be better to weigh in on this than Bruno himself?
Go to the source.
They say, hey, Bruce, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? He's like, no, it's a Bruce Willis movie.
Yes.
So I stick with Bruce.
Let's follow up and ask him.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, little diehard trivia for everybody. Do you know who they had to buy out the contract of, who was originally supposed to star in Die Hard when they were turning the book, Nothing Lasts Forever, which is what Die Hard is based on, into a movie? Does anybody know the answer to this
question?
I cannot play because I know.
You know the answer to it.
No, I don't think I've
They had to buy out the contract of a 70-year-old Frank Sinatra, who was attached to the Nothing Lasts Forever book version, which became Die Hard.
Yeah, he had right of first refusal. Mm-hmm. Like, he technically
He was
going to
be John McClane? Yeah, or was he going to be
No, he's
Hans.
John McClane. No, no, no. Wow. John McClane. That's right. 70-year-old Frank Sinatra running around that sucker.
Because he bought the rights to that book.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I got one other addition to what Mike added about how Die Hard originally came out in 1988 in the summer, not at Christmas time. The very famous Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, there's a pretty well-known story about how that was written in the middle of summer, but had all the vibes and had all the references to wintry, freezing fireplace and chestnuts roasting and all that, but it was not written at Christmas time at all. So kind of a little parallel there.
I'll actually say is when Iron Man 3 came out, which is more recently. I was a little kid when Die Hard came out. But when Iron Man 3 came out, I went to see it. That's a summer movie all about Christmas time. I wouldn't necessarily call it a Christmas movie, but there's a lot of wintry stuff in there.
Yeah, I think it takes place in vague winter.
Vague winter, I
don't think Christmas actually happens.
It's California. No, he buys the bunny for Pepper for Christmas.
Sure.
That's the whole thing. Right, there's no actual.
But that's what I'm saying. It's Christmas time.
Right. There might be at the end of the movie, it might actually be Christmas itself, but we don't know. But it was something nice in the summer when you walk into the theater and you kind of get that nostalgia for the holiday season.
Yeah, of course.
I'm always down for something like that. And if Die Hard came out in July of 89, that means the VHS came out in time for Christmas, most likely, because that's 6 months later.
I don't know what you guys are saying.
I like that.
VH what?
Yeah. But then folks throw it. It's like, well, if Die Hard is a Christmas movie, then that means Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie. And it's like, and that's why this postmodern revisionism kind of bothers me, because anything that takes place at vague Christmas time, ipso facto V is a V, be as it may, it's a Christmas movie?
So then I'll put this out there for Mike.
Ari's metric.
That's my metric. True. But I'll put this out. I'll change this a little bit for Mike.
Sure.
Okay? A Christmas movie is whatever you want to watch on Christmas.
Come on.
There you go.
Wow.
My family.
Way to reach across the aisle.
Too open-ended.
We don't do the whole Christmas thing. What does my family do for Christmas? Because we're Jewish. We get Chinese food. We go to the movies. Yeah. That has actually morphed into with my family. We get Chinese food, or my wife makes Chinese food, and we watch one of the diehards because the kids got tired of watching the first one every year.
And you go exploit the working Christians.
That is what we do.
And that scene at the Chinese restaurant in A Christmas Story, the 1983 version, boom, that's where something like that tends to come from.
No one sing it.
They aren't Jewish, obviously. It's because they can't roast the turkey properly.
I'm still reminded of Elena Kagan's hearing for Supreme Court when they asked her, what were you doing on this date at this time? Yeah. And it was December 25th. They had some controversy. And she totally shut it down, even though I'm not a biggest fan of her, by saying, well, like most Jews, I was doing the heritage of our forefathers, having Chinese food and probably at the movies for Christmas.
Right? I tell you, you have not lived until you've had a succulent Chinese meal on Christmas Day. We were talking about Four Christmases, and there was a time I went to go visit my dad on Christmas Day. He's not going to cook. I can't cook. So we found a Chinese restaurant and had a succulent Chinese meal on Christmas Day. It was delightful.
I'll tell you the most disappointing meal I ever had at a Chinese restaurant. There was that place that used to be nearby, Bamboo Garden, the vegetarian Chinese.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And somebody in my family had the brilliant idea. Let's go there for Thanksgiving. And I said, what? And they said, yeah, they're having a whole Thanksgiving. I go, it's not Thanksgiving. I got my hangups with Thanksgiving food, but those discs of soy tofu is not Thanksgiving food. So, yeah, we went, and it was as terrible as I expected it to be. Yes.
Major letdown.
Yes.
You mind if we hear some tunes?
This is the KVI Christmas Spectacular.
Hey, that'll work. Christmas music?
This is Christmas music.
It was December 24th on Hollis Avenue, the dark, when I seen a man.
It's time for more of the KVI Christmas Spectacular. Let's get in the holiday spirit.
Welcome back to the KVI Spectacular Holiday Extravaganza here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hope everyone is having a wonderful Christmas time season. And as you are driving around to wherever you are going to celebrate your holidays, oftentimes you're probably got the radio on. Hopefully you've got the radio on, keeping us with you as you go along the way. But you're also listening to music. And I thought we would take the time and talk a little bit about some of the songs and music of the Christmas time season that we keep with us. And some of us kind of keep some of those songs with us outside of the Christmas season. But Phil, you had mentioned that you had a couple selections that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I can give you stuff. I dig deep into some of this stuff. And we all love the classics, right? We all know the ones that end up on the Spotify or Amazon Music feed when we get into this sort of stuff. And we maybe kind of pick the subgenre of Christmas music that works for us. But let me throw out a couple of songs that I would highly recommend around Christmas time. Let's start one that's got a little bit of soul to it. This is Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Sharon Jones, rest her soul. She passed away just a couple of years ago. But Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings do all kinds of great R&B soul-influenced music. And this one is called Big Bulbs, as in light bulbs. Big Bulbs. Here's a little Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
I'm so a fish out of water here.
Baby, you got them big balls. This is a little double entendre going along.
I was
going
to say, really? I think there should be a horn somewhere around here for this one, right, Mike?
Baby, you got them big balls. Baby, you got them big balls. But this kind of ties in a little bit of Motown stuff. How much great Motown Christmas music came together. So it sort of revolves around that, although it's done here in the last 20-something years. Blink into the beat. All right, so there's one, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. And then if you kind of like that soul R&B sound, just go explore Sharon Jones' music library, and you'll find all kinds of other incredible stuff that she's done. And then this is one that I always want to play when we get to this time of year. For the talk shows on KVI, you know, as a bumper or something like that coming out of a break. But the way the vocal is on this one, it's sort of tough to hear. You do have to pay attention to the vocal. This is a song by Canned Heat. And a lot of people remember Canned Heat for the song Going Up the Country from the late 1960s. But this is a song, Christmas song they did called Christmas Boogie. So it's got that tough rock guitar to it, and you can hear as the beat goes on, it's sort of kind of got that vibe of going up the country a little bit. Let's
crunchy
listen.
I like it.
What I gotta say, gravelly voice.
We're gonna celebrate Christmas, do it the Candy way,
the Canned Heat way.
So put some love in your heart.
He says it too fast, you make it sound like it's candy.
So it's just a regular song. He just says Christmas once.
Yeah, Christmas and Christmas and New Year.
So it's the lethal weapon of music for Christmas, right?
The label said, you're going to need a Christmas song. And they're like, well, we don't have a Christmas song. They're like, fine, so they just went back. They found a regular song. And they're like, Christmas.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of Christmas
no
songs
no sleigh bells
here,
whatsoever.
I have updated totals. I went out and looked these up. Updated totals for how much Mariah Carey gets every year for All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Plenty.
Yeah. Yeah. So every year we do this is a good news story, right? But I did a full in-depth analysis of all the earnings. So here's how it breaks down. In December every year, don't forget this song came out in 1994. In December every single year, she earns anywhere from $600,000 to $1.2 million.
Wow.
We knew that. But the problem was we thought that was annually. Uh-uh. That's just December.
Oh, okay.
Annually. Off that one song, Mariah Carey brings in between $2.5 and $3 million a year.
Who's listening to it outside of December?
Well, I have no idea who's playing it, but apparently people doing karaoke bars. I don't know.
You have
that's an idea.
Can you have 9.5 or 10 months of Mariah Carey streamed for royalty purposes from mid to late January until we get to Halloween that equals more than the run-up of what gets played when everyone pulls up the song and everyone listens to the song between, say, Thanksgiving and New Year's?
Well, the past few years, she's actually leaned into this on social media. But here's something else. Since the song came out in 1994, the song has generated over $100 million in total royalties. One song. Literally one song. And it's great. It's still great.
I was going to say, I was going to wade into controversy here. That song rips.
Yeah, it
does. There's a reason why you can't get away from it. And it almost kind of sparks a conversation of like what gets into the Christmas song canon. Like at what point of transcendence does it then become a Christmas classic? Because, you know, we were talking about, you know, some untraditional Christmas classics, and you know, me and Zach got a couple as well. But like, I mean, you know, like Brenda Lee rocking around the Christmas tree, Nat King Cole, the Christmas song, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, you have like stone dead holiday classics, but yet over like the last 30 years, every single artist, I think it's probably like an album contractual thing with the record company, is like you need to have a Christmas album.
Yes.
Everybody has a Christmas album, from Barry Manilow to Kelly Clarkson to NSYNC.
Neil Diamond.
Every Jewish singer has a Christmas. No Hanukkah albums.
Right,
all they
right.
have is that. But here's something I would hear. Mike, here's a hot take for you. So I had heard, of course, All I Want for Christmas Is You when I was a kid, but I never paid much attention to it. Love Actually comes out.
Uh-huh.
And that great scene with the girl singing to the kid with the drums, but then singing to everybody, that's a great scene. And for me, that's when it really clicked with me.
Yeah.
Do you think that booted it higher up? Or do you think that was just nostalgic for everybody except for me? Because how much did that movie have to pay for the royalties also just to use that, given how popular that is?
Right.
And do you think that reintroduced it to a new generation, kept it coming, and put it more into it that now it's solidified as a Christmas time classic?
I could hear that argument. And I'd also say Love Actually is about as much of a Christmas movie as Die Hard is. But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, I mean, those movies are what, like half a decade apart, something like that. So it's not like there's like a huge span. And that song, All I Want for Christmas Is You, was a stone hit, like from jump. And you'll forget that that's one song off an entire album. You know, Mariah Carey has like an entire Christmas album, and it's fine. It's
Mike, what year do you think Love Actually came out?
2000?
Okay, yes, 2003. I thought you had said half a decade apart. I'm like, they're not half a decade
that's
apart.
9 years, isn't it? 94,
2000. Yeah, okay. Yeah. A decade then.
That's okay.
Either way.
Either way. Let's go with that. Zach, any favorites?
Yeah, I got a couple. There was one that I've always liked. I thought more people knew it. It's I should have grabbed the audio cut, but it's by Alan Sherman, the guy, kind of a comedy, early radio comedy songwriter guy. He did, Hello Fada. Hello, Mudda. Hello, Fada. Yeah. Another day at Camp Granada. Mm-hmm. And he's got a Christmas song called The 12 Gifts of Christmas. And it's all about...
I thought you were going to say The 12 Grifts.
I know.
That's a whole different song.
I thought he said... I
had to catch myself. But it's
a song
these,
about Tim
Walls
in Minnesota.
Like cheapo gifts from the 1960s. And the first day of Christmas always is a Japanese transistor radio. And then I think the fifth day of Christmas is a statue of a lady... statue of a lady with a clock where her stomach ought to be.
Oh, my.
And all sorts of outlandish, crazy gifts
it
from
captures
like
that, all
and it's
that,
very funny.
Yeah, it captures all that 1960s, 19...
I like it quite
maybe
a lot.
Into the 1970s sort of pop culture.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I like that. And then, of course, I think Mike and I are going to bond over my favorite ska Christmas song.
You can say the only ska Christmas.
No, there's a couple, but I won't go into it.
Okay, very good.
There's I Just Want to Skank for Christmas, Skank Me the Dance, Not the Lady. Anyway,
yes.
My
sorry.
Favorite
part
being...
skanking to the beat.
That's a track by Real
it's
Big
a
Fish.
Ska thing.
Pick it up. But I like Oi to the World, which is originally a song by the Vandals, made famous, by No Doubt.
I'd say infamous, but also that. I like it quite a bit. I rolled it on the Ari Hoffman show once, and this dude almost started vomiting uncontrollably to his garbage
Ari
can.
Ari hates ska music.
Disproportionately.
I really do. I don't know why.
So three of us are okay on ska. and then there's Ari.
I have a visceral reaction to ska music. Yeah. I don't know why.
We should do a bit where we take Ari to a ska show.
That's what I want for Christmas. That's what I want for Christmas.
All
I
for
want
for you, Zach. Yeah. We'll forgo the scotch or bourbon this year. I'll go with you to a ska show if you want.
Given that you're going, do we get to go to 8 nights of ska show?
Dude, you don't get 8 nights of good presents. You get like one.
Neither
present.
Do you. You get 8 nights of ska shows.
Oh God, that's awful.
But yeah, this will be a 2026 resolution for us to go to a show with Ari.
Oh, there you go. I love that.
Don't worry, they're never on Friday nights. They're not that popular.
That's always Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah. It's like we got work in the morning. Goodness. But Zach, you know, you bring up No Doubt, which is, you know, a ska band from a certain point of view, but it's also a punk band from a certain point of view. Do you have any kind of offbeat punk rock kind of like holiday classics?
Of course he does.
I thought you'd never ask. Phil and I, we both really like the song. It's punk rock adjacent, but a song by the Kinks, and it's called Father Christmas, which a lot of people know. Yeah, Father Christmas, give your money. Mm-hmm. Don't mess around with those silly toys. So I was like that one. There's a Fall Out Boy song called something. It's a ridiculously long Fall Out Boy song title that I can never remember. Something about You'll Miss Me for Christmas or something. But it's just a very a funny song about like the last thing I want to see this Christmas is you. Mm-hmm. Basically, don't come around. I hope your New Year's awful.
Yeah,
and so it's got a fun.
It's a breakup song. You
know? Yes,
very much so, as Fall Out Boy tends to do. with that kind of emo skate punk adjacent.
Oh yeah, Bad Religion does a number. They have a whole Christmas album.
I was going to bring that up. Like the band, the punk band that you would never think of, Bad Religion, has an entire album. It's more of an EP, but it's just called Christmas Songs.
And they stick to the hymns.
And that's the thing. It's like with some of the other things we were talking about, it's like, you know, they're snark, they're sarcasm. The thing that is so subversive and subjective about this Bad Religion Christmas album is that it's all just straight. Like, you know, they've got, you know, punk rock beats and guitars and all that stuff. But the way that singer Greg Graffin sings the thing, because like he was raised on like, you know, church choirs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so he knows how to sing. And obviously with a band named Bad Religion, you would think that there's a certain connotation there. So the fans were kind of blown away by how earnest and straightforward it is. And it's some incredible renditions of Christmas songs. Probably one of my favorite versions of Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Yeah. I really enjoy that one because he sings it with the exclamation mark in it. And you
hark.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty rad.
Now, I'm not going to bring up Adam Sandler. I would never do that. We all know the Hanukkah song. But I'm asking honestly,
yes.
Are there any notable and or viable Hanukkah songs?
You're going to laugh. The only one aside from that one. And it's only really viral in the Jewish world. There was this group called the Maccabees.
Okay.
They were the a cappella group for Yeshiva University.
Is this the one that does Elton Jonica?
Do they? I don't know.
I think that's different.
They had this one hit which ripped off Dynamite. Okay. They ripped off the song Dynamite and made it about Hanukkah. And that song now goes crazy. So one time we go to a karaoke bar. We're in a karaoke bar, and we go, hey, let's request a stupid song and sing the Maccabees version instead. And all the non-Jews are looking at us like, what the hell are these people doing?
So you request Tayo Cruz Dynamite, and you swap in your own words.
And we swap in
great.
The stupid words from the acapella
that's
thing
great.
Because it was such a big deal. Now, this thing went viral in the real world, too, which is why it was such a hit, but it petered out, meaning you'll hear it at
the
a
real
Hanukkah
world
party.
Wants to be inclusive. We say happy holidays a lot of times. Yeah. It's not that we don't want to spit.
I don't ask anybody.
I know
to
you
do
don't.
That.
I'm just saying that the general public at large says happy holidays a lot. We try to be inclusive. We want to spin a Hanukkah song. There's just nothing.
There's
to
correct, nothing good. I mean, let's go over the hits, shall we? Shall we?
Please enlighten us.
Okay. Be that as they may.
I had a little dreidel. Okay,
which made
I
it
think,
out of clay.
You see, you know that one. Okay, you've got the Adam Sandler Hanukkah song. Only the OG version has stood the
it's
test.
It's not
of
too
time.
Shabby.
Thank you, Zach. Then you've got Peter, Paul, and Mary. Light one candle. That's basically
man,
it.
That dips off quick.
Yeah,
don't it?
That's what I'm saying. There's nothing. And then this Maccabees song, Dynamite ripoff. called Candlelight. Well, right? That's what it is.
I have to look at this as an untapped market.
Oh, no. You want to make a Hanukkah song and it's good, we'll take
There's another Jewish a cappella group. Check it out. They do a song called, it's called Elton Jonica's, the song.
Okay, hang on. Now you're going to make
yes,
me go
we're
going to
get it. Elton
like...
Jonica's, you would think it's a cover of, or a, you know, a parody of Step Into Christmas. It's a parody of Tiny Dancer, and it's Tiny Dreidel.
Oh, my gosh. That's incredible.
Okay.
It's a solid little number, too.
Yeah.
We played it on the show a week
every
or two
time
ago.
You talk about this, I get mad because every artist who's Jewish has a Christmas album, and they couldn't make one Hanukkah song, a token Hanukkah song, on any of those albums.
Well, you know, while Ari is looking at that, no conversation about Christmas music and it being in the Pacific Northwest would be complete without at least touching on Bob Rivers' Twisted Tunes.
Oh,
and
I thought you were going to say...
Christmas in the Northwest?
Yeah, Christmas in the Northwest.
No one needs
that. No one needs that.
Merry Christmas from Payless. You know, that kind of situation. Yep. No, I want to tell a brief story. I was at the tribute to Bob Rivers show out at the Snoqualmie Casino and Resort a while ago, and his son, Andrew Rivers, who is a comedian in his own right, comes out and tells a story about how, like, growing up, he doesn't even know the proper lyrics to holiday songs. So he's going through Target singing about walking around in women's underwear, and now he's on a watch list.
Chipmunks roasting on an open fire.
Any other letters,
yeah. But it's interesting, the legacy of Bob Rivers and Twisted Tunes. I mean, obviously, you know, Hall of Fame broadcaster. And to us here in the Pacific Northwest, we know him as a radio host, but we forget sometimes that Twisted Tunes has a legacy all its own that transcends this part of the country. I couldn't get out of here without mentioning that. I think Police Took My Car is probably my favorite.
Oh, my car.
A riff on Feliz Navidad. Yeah.
Like I said, I'm partial to Chipmunks roasting on an open
fire. Yeah, that's
just so detailed and graphic.
I always did kind of like the Police Stole My Car. Like,
yeah. I might have to go revisit these because I haven't heard these. Yeah. Zach, you asked about the Elton Jonica. Okay. Friends, being a refugee of the a cappella world, I could tell you that first movie, Pitch Perfect, is true. Oh. All that in stuff is true.
I'm now swapping out Bounce House Tycoon for a cappella refugee.
A cappella refugee.
I think I saw a cappella refugee open up.
Here is why.
For the cast of Glee once.
Oh, here is why I have not heard of Elton Jonica and why I'm going to laugh even more now. It is by a group called the 613s.
Okay.
Now, there was a rivalry between the 613s and the Maccabees.
Oh, my goodness.
The group I mentioned earlier.
It's like
now,
the
both
Jets
them,
and the West Side
right,
story.
Perfect
they
nonsense.
Were competing for domination on the Upper West Side of Manhattan's Jewish scene.
Oh, my God.
And then the Maccabees were kind of thought of as less than because they were some college occupants, and these were the professionals who, you know, are like have lives and do this on
well,
the
take
weekends.
A listen, you'll know why.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a real slobs versus snobs situation.
Oh, it really is.
Real Animal House.
Then
the Maccabees come out with this Candlelight ripoff, go uber viral, and people are like, what the hell's a 613? We just know the Maccabees. And now, because of that stupid song, every year, every Jewish a cappella group, because there's 1,000 of them who all think they're going to go viral like the Maccabees, all come out with their dumb Hanukkah song. So this is the most dumbest Hanukkah song. You can't give me a real artist to come out with something good. I got to have the 613s and the Maccabees. That's what I get for my holiday.
Well, I'm glad we've started a rivalry.
Oh, really?
I don't even know the players involved. I've chosen a side.
A friend of mine, actually, he called a buddy of mine who used to be in the 613s. He goes, dude, you got beat by the Maccabees. Yeah, that's really deep.
You
deep
were a member?
Stuff. No, he didn't call me. He called my friend. This was whatever. Yes, not me. I was not in either of these groups. Thank you very much.
What was yours called?
It doesn't matter.
You
Let's
had a
move
name.
On.
You had a name. Hold on.
It's Hebrew. It's Hebrew. It's okay. Don't worry about it. It's not exciting. It was the Queen's College Tees Moret. There you go. See? I told you. Not
you needed
exciting.
To catch your name. Maybe it could have done as well as a 613.
There was a group, a Jewish group. I think it was at Brandeis or Barnard. Their name was Magevet, which in Hebrew is towel, because the Christian group was holy water.
Mm.
So to mop up the holy water, that was their little shtick.
Sure.
But yeah, like I said, Pitch Perfect, truer than you know. Mm.
What an end to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that my venting is done.
Perfect.
We got a whole lot more in the KVI Christmas Spectacular Holiday Edition coming at you here on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Talk Radio 570 KVI. This is the KVI Christmas Spectacular. We're not afraid to say it. Merry Christmas. Welcome back to the KVI Christmas Spectacular.
Hi, everyone. This is your old friend John Carlson here to continue a great KVI tradition, the reading of the story of the birth of Christ. This is the Gospel of St. Luke. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you, ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, Let us go now, even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at these things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart. And the angels returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. This is the story of the birth of Jesus Christ.
We're not afraid to say it. Merry Christmas. Welcome back to the KVI Christmas Spectacular.
Let's take a moment and talk about some of our favorite holiday traditions, be it for Christmas, Hanukkah, or whatever else you might celebrate. Phil, what always stands out to you in the holiday season?
Traditions-wise, a lot of my family stuff just revolves around food. I don't know if I'm alone in that, but food is kind of where it all revolves for us. So some of the big ones would be something called Lucia buns. Does this sound familiar to anyone?
No. Tell me more.
We just actually made them a couple of nights ago. But
Lucia
buns.
I mean, it's a nickname I'm called often.
Exactly.
Get those Lucia buns over here.
There is the possibility for double entendres here. So Lucia bun, it's kind of a curly Q. Almost comes out in like the way we end up rolling it out. like an infinity symbol,
mm-hmm.
but that's just for the sake of how it it bakes. But then it's got this egg wash that you put over it, so it kind of gets goldeny brown across the top. But then the bread is nice and fluffy, and generally lots of butter. And then you put a little candied cherry. We get green and red candied Ooh. Cherries to put in between the kind of the ends that make up the infinity kind of loop on either end.
This sounds delicious.
So it decorates it a little bit, gives it a little decoration there.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, breakfast-wise, in the days before and after Christmas, it turns into a great kind of a breakfast item. Maybe throw it in with some eggs or something like that.
Is this like a Christmas season tradition, or is this specifically for a day?
We do it in advance. You know,
this isn't like a Christmas
morning.
You got
to get the bread to rise and all that. Exactly. So it's a little time consuming in that respect. So we always do it in advance. But then we've got that when 10 or 12 of the family members are all getting together. So that's one of them. Another one that my mom has always done is a Scandinavian thing called lefse.
Oh,
does that name
yeah.
sound familiar?
My dad's got a lefse stick.
Yes, exactly. You got to have a stick for rolling out the dough because it's got to be
very flat.
Well,
you got to have a special griddle.
We got to back up. I have no idea what you are talking about, and everybody else does.
We got to introduce Ari to the lefse.
I've never heard this word before in my life.
It's I'll have to figure out if it's kosher and bring you some.
I'm sure we can figure out a kosher version.
Right? White person tortilla.
Yeah, exactly.
It is tortilla adjacent, I would say.
I was thinking about all this. Is it unleavened? I can't remember. I think that's part of it because it doesn't rise.
It's a potato. It's a potato-based product, so it's essentially
There is potato-style lefse, but
other
then we
styles?
Do one with flour. Ours is flour.
So it's
only.
A giant burrito
You're
or something?
Just making tortillas, Phil.
Exactly.
I hate to break it to
comes
you.
Off like, it comes off like a tortilla, I'll give you that. But you basically get two flat pieces of it. And you roll it out very thin. That's the thing. You got to roll it out super thin. That's why you use the stick to roll it up and roll it out. And we use the back of like large round pizza tins.
Okay.
And then we put it into the oven and you put it in about 500 degrees or so, but maybe for 45 seconds. So it just gets a little chance to kind of crisp, not even crisp up, but just to kind of briefly cook up so that it's not doughy. It's got some sturdiness to it. And then you pop it back out. You pile it into a bunch of tea towels so that the heat and the moisture that comes off of the heat will kind of stay on the flour.
Phil, have you thought about doing a cooking show?
No, don't
make me do that. This is very specific.
Phil and I could not be making this less
more differently. I'll cut to the chase here, right?
Yeah.
I'll cut to the chase here. You roll out like 10 or 12 of these things, and then you get a cinnamon sugar butter combo.
That's what's
And
up.
You get all the cinnamon sugar butter whipped together.
Oh, it's like a dessert kind of
thing. It's like
a giant cinnamon.
It's like an elephant ear, but not fried.
Okay.
That's probably a good analogy.
You eat it a similar way.
Exactly.
Like Phil alludes to, we make them quite differently, I think, but I think a traditional lefse is a riced potato, basically mashed potato, but super fine. You're essentially making flat gnocchi, like the potato pasta, but you're making a thin, flat potato-based dough. It's a little thicker than a tortilla, but about tortilla size.
Yeah,
we use like a cast iron pan that's like a cast iron flat grill pan on the stovetop, and then we don't use the stick to roll it. We use a stick to kind of get under. It's just a long stick that's flat on one side.
You need like a pizza kind of thing, like to get under the dough.
Exactly. You're making a pizza. Yeah. But you're making it quick and you're flipping it. And it's doughy but still firm. And
this
sounds,
as Mike would say, delightful.
It really is.
The other way, I've had it served at like the Pacific Lutheran University. They do like a Norwegian fest or something. They'll do, you get the cinnamon sugar, or they'll kind of wrap it in a Polish dog and use it almost as a bun sort of thing.
This is where we part ways. Okay. I don't like the cinnamon wrapped around the meat. I like to enjoy my meat with
No. Separate.
Yeah.
No, the cinnamon's not involved when you add the meat to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, I'm with you.
So think of it like a dessert, basically.
Okay, I got
you. Or you can use the lefse to wrap a hot dog.
Oh, well then it's just like a hush puppy if you're putting like the mashed potatoes or whatever in it.
Well, you don't put the mashed potatoes in it.
It's a lost cause explaining this. It's interesting to listen to both Phil and Zach talk about the way that they prepare it, because my wife's family, who has a lot of Norwegian Scandinavian heritage, they have an actual lefse griddle that gets like passed around from like family to family, like down to like, you know, mothers to daughters to cousins to
to all of that, and it basically makes the rounds. And I remember at Thanksgiving, it's like, well, who's making lefse this year? Well, who's got the griddle? That kind of thing. It's like there's like a little bit of legislation involved to get this done. But yeah, it is a delightful treat, Ari. I think you would do well to check it out.
This sounds very, very
I'm gonna have
good.
To bring some in for you.
This
I'll
sounds
figure out
very
if we
good.
Can make it applicable for you.
Yeah, for us, we just do a lot of fried stuff. Mm-hmm. The idea is from Hanukkah because mm-hmm. of the oil. Mm-hmm. You make right. everything in oil. So latkes, which you hear about all the time,
love
they're
that,
glorified
right?
hash browns. Mm-hmm. They are giant hash browns. There's different ways to make them. And last year or 2 years ago, I challenged my father-in-law because I saw his recipe online. And I said, have you ever thought of putting meat in your latkes? And it was like a light bulb went off. Like, oh, we never thought of doing this before because you guys have hash browns. You have bacon next to them. We don't do the bacon, right?
Right, right, right.
So we put beef fry in the latkes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's life changing. However, then you can't have your donut because you can't have the meat products with the dairy products. So there goes your Krispy Kreme donuts. Yeah, I will say, little funny story here. The one kosher Krispy Kreme in Seattle, which is the one over on First Avenue South, they were talking about giving up their kosher certification.
Oh, no.
And it was right around November time. And I went in there and I met with the franchise owner because I caught wind of this. I said, can you do me a favor and just give me till the end of the year?
Yeah, at least.
And he said, sure, no. I called every Jewish organization in town. And I said, go down there and buy those donuts for Hanukkah. So that's how we saved kosher Krispy Kreme.
Well, it's interesting, Ari. So, you know, we've accidentally made this a potato-adjacent segment.
Yes.
But like, you know, what
Tater Talk with Big Mike.
There it is. One of the favorite treats we like to make specifically for Christmas morning, Christmas Day, is my wife makes a cheesy potato casserole type of dish. Oh, yeah. It's basically like sour cream and hash browns and cheese and all of that other stuff. But the thing that I remember the first time my wife made it and brought it to family Christmas, it's topped with, get this, cornflakes.
Okay.
What? Like actual cornflakes
combo before.
Yeah. And when you bake it, it gives it a nice little crumbly crunch on top.
I like that.
But I remember my mom getting she had like a spoon in her hand, she's jabbing at it. Like what is this? I'm like, it's cornflakes, Mom. Don't worry about it. It's awesome. You'll love it. And anyway, so that's been one of our traditional Christmas Day type of things. I want to talk a little bit about since we've gotten on this food tangent, the difference between Thanksgiving foods and Christmas foods, and is there a difference? Like, for example, in our family, we don't do a lot of turkey, but like on Thanksgiving, we'll do turkey and sometimes ham. Mm-hmm. For us, we do a lot of ham. We also do a lot of beef. One of my favorite Christmas memories is my father-in-law. He used to make we still make it. He's not with us anymore, but he would do like a giant prime rib roast and put it in the oven. It would cook all day and the house would just fill with this savory aroma of this prime rib, just baking and cooking all day. But anyway, my father-in-law would come out with a wine bottle in his hand. He'd open up the oven, pull the roast out. One for the roast, one for me.
One for the host. One for the host.
And I just always love that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so we do like, you know, so we have like our prime rib roast, homemade horseradish, you know, potatoes, gravy, corn, green bean casserole, all that other stuff that has like Thanksgiving overlap, but isn't entirely. So
you don't want to repeat, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a point of order question.
Please.
Here. I've heard the term Christmas bird before, but I thought on Thanksgiving is when we have the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the bird a factor in Christmas?
I wonder if that's an old-timey thing, because doesn't Scrooge on like Christmas morning, give me a Christmas goose.
Is that right? Like Christmas goose, Christmas
I could be.
Bird.
I am not the foremost authority on this by far, but I don't think it's like a biblical tradition or anything. I just think it's one of those old-timey, like Mike said, it's an old feast meal, you know?
Like, I got you. Yeah. Like, have a turkey leg.
I don't know anybody that still does a meal like that for Christmas. I think of Thanksgiving as the holiday where you eat food because you have to.
Yes.
And Christmas, rather, is when you eat the food that you want to. So
what do you want to eat in the young Zach household on a Christmas?
Well, so my family's tradition has always really been on Christmas Eve. The family, small family business that we've got was always open on Christmas Eve. And then they'd close a little early, maybe, 3 instead of 6 or something like that. And starting with my grandfather, now my dad, they'd pick up Papa Murphy's pizza on the way home because Papa Murphy's is open on Christmas Eve. Yeah. And so we all every year have what I believe to be the superior pie.
I was going to say, hot take, by the way, if you want a sponsorship opportunity, send your email to zach@kvi.com. My cohort here, Zach, has stuck his neck out, and Papa Murphy's is his favorite pizza.
I lead the take and bake revolution. That's love at 425. You know what kind of commitment you have to just throw the instruction manual out the window? I don't need it. Don't buy. Save the paper when you're wrapping up my Papa Murphy's pizza. But anyway, every Christmas Eve, that's what we do. We do Papa Murphy's pizza. And why bother cooking something that no one really likes?
Yeah.
When you could have something that is indisputably the best pizza to ever be made.
And, you know, that goes back to spending all day cooking something, too. You get to save all your time and effort on that, so then you can do more with the family stuff.
I wish I had a pizza place. No more kosher pizza in Seattle. Wish I had a pizza place.
Nobody's doing that.
By the way, I will say, Zach, just to go to bat for you for a second here, I've never had any of these places. I've never had any of them. Mm-hmm. But Papa Murphy's is the one I'd want to eat from. Their commercials are fantastic. That's the one I want to eat.
I love it. I love that that's the bar to clear.
Yeah.
I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe. The ones that look like Santa Claus, Christmas trees and bells and stars. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe. Now Christmas cookies are a special treat. The more she bakes, the more I eat. And sometimes I can't get myself to stop. Sometimes she'll wait till I'm asleep, and she'll take the ones that I didn't eat and put those little sprinkly things on top. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe. Ones that look like Santa Claus, Christmas trees and bells and stars. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe. Now those sprinkly things just make things worse, 'cause it makes them taste better than they did at first, and they're absolutely impossible to resist. Some disappear to who knows where, but I make sure that I get my share, and those kids just stand there waiting for the ones I miss. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar. Sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe.
And now, the KVI Christmas Spectacular continues.
Phil, you want to discuss the TV show era, which has gotten kind of overlooked in this Christmas discussion.
We've covered the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, thoroughly.
And,
yes.
Yes.
I think we're about movie now.
When we all talked about this off the air, this is one of the things that occurred to me. It's looking at lists of Christmas movies, there are only a couple I really care for as Christmas movies. Certainly it's something you want to, you know, go back to and watch again, maybe on an annual basis. But the stuff that I really appreciate the most are some of the TV specials and things like that. And for me, so many of them revolve around those Rankin and Bass Christmas show. Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, that era. And that was from before I was born, but I just have such vivid memories of that being a main event in December around Christmas.
Absolutely. So. Well, and I remember being a kid, Phil, and like it being old when I was a kid, but it was like a
kind of
tradition.
Already vintage, right?
Exactly. And even now, they still show those on television. It's like it's still viable. And it was one of my first forays into like that style of animation, that kind of like
stop motion.
Weird herky-jerky stop motion thing and stuff like that. And like the aesthetic just kind of blew my mind, and the music was great. I really have a lot of affection for that Rankin and Bass stuff. When we were kind of roasting Zach a little bit about his costume purchase of the of Drew Luhu of the Grinch. No conversation about the television iconic Christmas specials would be complete with a without a discussion about the original Grinch, how the Grinch stole Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, that original animated cartoon for TV.
Yeah, yeah, so good.
That one's got to be in there as well. And then you can mix in the Charlie Brown type stuff.
Sure.
That is still pretty impactful for a lot of people, or still becomes must-see TV, too.
You're going to make fun of me, Mike.
Yes.
I only saw the Star Wars Christmas special for the first time last year. I had never seen that sucker before.
Where did you see it? Like, did you get like a bootleg DVD or something?
It was somebody streamed it, and then it was taken down because I forwarded it to people, and they go, Ari, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
But I had never seen it. I knew it existed. I had heard about clips of it. It was up. It was gone. That was that. There was a rumor they were bringing it to...
widely available on YouTube?
Well, there was a discussion they were going to bring it to Disney+, but Mike, you would know better than I. Was this one of those things that George Lucas goes, this is why I'm not slapping Star Wars on anything anymore, like the Ewok movies?
Basically, he's turned his back on it. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is a mistake. It's no longer in canon. I don't want people to find it. The only thing that has crossed over to the mainstream from that is there's a animated vignette that starring Han Solo and Chewbacca the Wookiee, where they introduce the feared bounty hunter Boba Fett, and they have a misadventure with this Boba Fett character who was meant to be a major player in the upcoming new movie The Empire Strikes Back, and this was kind of like the beginning of that hype for that character. And that's part of what made that Star Wars holiday special so iconic, as opposed to something that just kind of got forgotten in the dustbin of history. Because it's weird. You got like B. Arthur in there, and there's like song.
It's strange.
It's very bizarre. And this animated vignette, it runs maybe like 6 minutes or something like that. It's a very short portion of the overall special that has been resurrected, and it is on Disney Plus. You could just watch that.
Oh, that little section is on
Disney Plus. The Boba Fett cartoon, yes, but none of the other stuff is available anywhere. That's why I asked where you got it.
And, yeah, no, it was not legit. Because what happened was that thing was on Disney Plus, and I'm like, where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
And I went hunting for it, and somebody had the bright idea to upload their VHS copy or whatever it was. It was shaky, it was garbage, and then it was gone.
When I was a teenager and started going to like fan conventions and comic cons and stuff like that, I had a bootleg VHS cassette that looked probably as rickety, probably the same transfer as the thing you were looking at. And it looked like you were watching like, you know, something forbidden, like Faces of Death or something like that. It's like, I shouldn't have this,
you know,
that kind of thing. So it had like a mystique to it. But yeah, once you watch it, it's trash.
It looked pretty trashy. I will say something else is that, Phil, you were talking about the TV show stuff a minute ago, is that going into sweeps, the winter sweeps, you know, at the end of the, right before Christmas, so many shows did Christmas episodes where Christmas is part of it. And something I always look forward to was the West Wing. The West Wing, the way they decked out the White House, we've spoken about this on the show before, how I love the decked out White House for Christmas.
You just love West Wing.
Well, I do love West Wing, but their Christmas episodes were always great. And just like the Thanksgiving episodes with friends, but the problem was like later seasons forgot about it. And you're like, where's my Christmas episode?
Oh,
and they had these
other,
so they had four or five seasons and the thing's seven seasons long and there was no Christmas episode. And I was just really bummed out about that. That's my own Michigas.
Fun fact, The Simpsons, the very first episode of The Simpsons, I went back and obviously I missed the boat on that the first go around. And I thought, I want to see, I've never seen The Simpsons.
You
I'll go
wasn't
watch it.
Born yet.
Yeah. That was the joke.
Oh, God.
And the Tracy Ullman version? The spinoff from Tracy
that's
Ullman?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's my God, he doesn't 80. Even know. He
I don't
doesn't.
Know
the Simpsons is a spinoff of a comedy show called The Tracy Ullman Show. Yeah.
Okay.
What's a Tracy Ullman? Ask your grandparents.
The point I was getting to was that I thought Disney Plus sent me to the wrong thing because the first episode is a Christmas episode.
Yep.
Basically, a Christmas special.
That's correct, yeah.
And I was like, what is going on?
Well, especially given that they're known for their Halloween specials.
Exactly.
Like Treehouse of Horror kind of deal. All right, good deal. Phil, any other TV shows float your boat?
I just wanted to bookmark on the Tracy Ullman thing. Didn't she just show up in some massive piece of pop culture? Was it a movie? Did
she was
just
in something.
Have a bit part here a month or 2 months ago?
She did. She walked on screen.
Yeah.
I remember we went, holy cow, is that
exactly.
Tracy Ullman?
And I did the same thing. After
Tracy Ullman's jump scare. It's like, whoa.
If you say so.
For 60 seconds or 2 minutes, I went, I know her. That's Tracy Ullman, who I haven't seen since she was probably on the Tracy Ullman show in 1989.
Now I got some Googling to do. Mike, you got something?
Well, no, I was just going to say, it was interesting talking about like sitcoms of the era, because every 80s sitcom had a Christmas episode, like Cheers, Taxi, sure. Family Ties, you name it. And I remember one time my wife and I got home from our four Christmases, and we were sitting watching the TV, and Paramount Plus has like a curated Christmas episode playlist where you just hit play and it just starts burning all these Christmas episodes. And the thing that you don't realize when you try to watch these a la carte is that they're not particularly good, and it's not particularly satisfying to watch random episodes of sitcoms. And they're explicitly Christmas episodes, but still, it's just like this was not the memory lane that I thought. I think I'll stick with Rankin and Bass. I think I'll stick with Frosty the Snowman. Shoot, I'll even watch Frosty Returns. I like that.
Yeah, like when they do musical episodes of TV shows. We got a whole lot more as part of our Christmas holiday special. A whole lot more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Talk Radio 570 KVI. This is the KVI Christmas Spectacular. It's time for holiday spirit and good old common sense. The Christmas Spectacular is back, only on 570 KVI.
So while we've been talking about food, let's talk about like actual like stuff that we do. Because like, you know, Phil, you'd mentioned it. Zach, you'd mentioned it as well. You know, you do food that you want so that you can do the stuff that you want. What kind of stuff happens at the Fang Hang? What do you guys actually do on the Christmas, either Eve or day? Or like, are you Eve people? Are you day people?
Well, so my side of the family is definitely Christmas Eve people. That's pizza day. No one touches pizza day. Lately, though, I've been usually getting to start the day here with you guys, which is fun, and I love doing that, and then get to go home and have my pizza. But then we do usually gifts and everything on Christmas Eve, and then her family, we kind of dedicate Christmas morning over there. Her family has, my wife's family has a fun tradition. There's quite a lot of them. There's, I think it's 6 kids in all. Mm-hmm. So growing up, they wanted to slow down the Christmas gift opening, so my father-in-law invented... He would come up with fun games, almost like escape rooms before escape rooms were cool.
Nice.
And the kids would have to find clues. And, you know, along with the clues, they'd uncover little gifts, you know, maybe $5 here, you know, bag of candy or something. But then they'd also get to determine the order in which they got to open their gift.
So that's pretty great. Ingenious.
And they've
I'm writing that down.
Every year he says that. Yeah, every year he says, I'm not doing that anymore. Yeah. And then. Every year.
It ends up happening, right?
All of his daughters, now married, continues to make some sort of elaborate game. So that's kind of fun on Christmas Day. And then usually when we'll go back to my parents for some Christmas dinner and open the gifts that Santa has brought.
Nice.
I like that.
It's like reverse Easter or something.
Yeah.
With the scavenger hunt aspect of it. I'm writing that down. That sounds awesome. So, Zach, you mentioned like the gift giving stuff. So, on my wife's side of the family, we do like the white elephant game
type of
thing, where you know you draw numbers and you know you get to steal or unwrap or take one from the pile, and you know whoever gets number one gets last pick. And you know there's always discussion about the rules. It's how many steals are allowed, no take backsies, that kind of thing. But to your point, Zach, about you know looking to lengthen the experience, over the last few years, we've added a undercard to the festivities. Have any of you all heard of the Saran Wrap ball game?
Lars Larson was telling me about this on the phone the other day, that he does that with his family.
It's fun as hell. So basically, get a bunch of knickknacks, like little candies or liquor bottles or games or small things, trinkets.
Something you can wrap up in Saran Wrap.
Exactly. And what you do is you make these in like to a giant snowball boulder wrapped in Saran Wrap. And basically the way we play is the ball goes around the circle, and you can unwrap until the person next to you rolls doubles. It's a dice game.
Oh, okay.
So, you're unwrapping.
You were going to say a timer or something like that. You got 40 seconds, go.
Exactly. So it's like somebody's rolling, like, you know, somebody can have particularly bad luck, and you can have half the ball unrolled yourself, or you get nothing. And you just go around until there's nothing left. You know, that we put in like cash, scratch tickets, all kinds of knickknacks. But that's a there are worse ways to kill an hour.
There's kind of in similar vein, reminded me of another tradition that I learned from my wife's family, both her mom's side and her dad's side, do what's called a free gift exchange. Does anybody do a free gift exchange?
I haven't done that.
The idea being that it has to be, and there's different iterations, whether you do it as a white elephant gift exchange or if you, you know, draw a person from a name draw and then you curate your free gift towards that person. But the idea being that it's something you've gotten for free, but you try to make it as elaborate as possible. So now working here at the radio station, I know you guys have seen me always scrounging for little freebies we get from the movies or tickets or compact
stuff.
Yeah, compact discs, perhaps.
Stuff that we've had in the closet for 20 years.
Yeah, and
then
you'll usually couple that with like a gift card. You know, some people's insurance or work health care program has, if you exercise that's X amount of times, there's some program where they'll give you a $25 Amazon gift card.
Sure.
So that there you got that gift card for free. Or if it's a buy one, get one free, you can buy, for example, socks for yourself, and you donate, and you take the free socks, and you put that in your free gift. But you try to make it as big. One year, brother-in-law donated plasma and took his $250, and that was his free gift.
So, this reminds me, every year around the holiday season, I used to do an event for the youth group. It was a casino night. But it's a casino. The kids don't have money. I mean, they do. They have their parents' money. But basically, they pay a fee. They come in. It's one of those raffle ticket casino nights. You win raffle tickets. The problem we realized was because we had a nonprofit number, I would always go to Best Buy and reserve every hot holiday item, whether it was an Xbox, a PlayStation, whatever. And I would walk out on like Black Friday carrying everything, making everybody envious. It's all for the stupid casino night. But what I quickly realized after a year or two, it was the kids who were good at gambling that won all the good prizes.
They know math.
Future delinquents.
Right, exactly, because they had all the tickets. So what I started doing was
putting... Is this why you're not in charge of the youth group anymore?
There's a whole other story about some kid who got really mad about this one year. But moving on. So what happened was I would start putting the big items in one big raffle as opposed to these little raffles. And everybody only got one ticket upon entry for the big raffle. That was just how it went. But there were also, for lack of a better word, free items, booby prizes, and we would call it Ari's.
I'm sorry, what?
You never heard that before?
No.
Not those kind of booby prizes. Anyway, we had Ari's box of crap. And what it was all the stuff I would get as free promotional items for running the youth group, all stuff I found around the house. One year, my father-in-law, he had those antenna headphones they used to have in the 80s. He had a Discman. We gave all the stuff out. So I pull your ticket, and then I told you what you won.
Like booby prizes.
There you go. Exactly. Precisely, no, yes. Sydney Sweeney in the box. But there was, it was really
amazing. A booby trap that actually catches boobies.
Exactly. So that was all. It always makes me think of that when you bring up something like the free gift exchange idea.
I love it. How about you, Phil? You know, we've talked about some of
the food traditions. Yeah. I'll give you a couple. My mom, my wife like to do, and my sister all like to do jigsaw puzzle,
nice.
Which is not my jam.
Oh.
So there's usually a jigsaw puzzle going, and then there's kind of a round robin. You know, people circle in and circulate in and out, and I'll try and assist to the extent that I can. I just don't have the attention span for some of that.
You're more of a separate the edges type of guy.
Exactly. I'll help you look for the edge pieces, and that's really my forte. And then the other thing that we'll do a lot, we'll play cards. And we play a family card game called 99. I don't know if anyone's ever come across this one. You get three cards in your hand, and then there are four cards within the deck that are what you call safety cards. The 4 is a reverse, the 9 is an automatic 99, the 10 is a subtract 10, a minus 10, and the king is a freeze or a 0, and the jack and queen are worth 10. All the other cards are worth their face value unless they're one of those safety cards. So ace, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then jacks and queens are 10. You can go up to 99, you can't go over 99.
Right.
So you count up, you count up, you count up, and if someone can't make a valid play, the hand is over, and you usually get two or three chips.
I was going to say normally start with some pennies or dollars
or
something.
We always played for pennies when I was a kid, and now with my son, we're playing for dollars. Or
that's inflation. For
sometimes it's an M&M or something like
thanks,
that.
Thanks, Obama.
You know? Yep. Some Bidenomics.
A piece of lefse or something
Obama!
Like that. And then you run out, you're out of the game, and then it goes down to five players or four players or three players to eventually two on two to determine the champion.
That's like the great dreidel tournament at my in-laws' house. Yeah. So this started when the kids were little, and they just like playing dreidel because when the kids were little, my father-in-law offers up $100 to whoever wins every year the great dreidel tournament. So they're playing with the gelt, and basically when you spin the dreidel, it's you either get everything in the pile. It's like poker, but with a top. So you either get everything, you get half, or you have to put some in, or you'll lose everything. That's basically the four sides of a dreidel. Now, this thing has gotten so intense, I never play. This thing has gotten so intense that now that the kids are all out of the house, they all call in and they are all playing.
So they want to be represented.
They want to be there and they want the bragging rights.
Who spins
they don't even no, they each have a dreidel.
Here's why. Is rigging it.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
He's got a way to dreidel.
They have to like show it while it's spinning. They're really serious about it. There's no funny business because when it's your turn to spin, you have to spin your dreidel.
Sure.
Now, I think there's some issues because not every dreidel spins the same way.
Right.
There's balance issues. It was really cute when there were tons of them around one table, but it's really funny seeing all the cell phones set up so they can all play now. That's a whole nother. And then just before I end our family traditions here for me, there was one year where Cards Against Humanity came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the second or third year where Cards Against Humanity came out. For those of you who don't know what this game is,
don't.
It is filthy and perverted, and I can't say anything in it.
If you don't, keep it that way.
Yeah. Not FCC compliant.
So what happens?
Apples
was,
to apples for adults.
Yeah.
And twisted-minded folks.
Very adult. So what happens is they came out with a Hanukkah. They came out with a Hanukkah expansion pack.
Oh.
And my wife was so excited to show this off.
She
brought it up to her parents' house.
No.
Wait, it gets better. Her grandparents go, "What's that? Oh, why don't we all play?"
Oh.
I don't think I have ever laughed harder in my life than at our Hanukkah family event. The kids are in the other room dreidling or whatever it is, and we're playing Cards Against Humanity with my wife's 90-year-old grandparents.
Oh, that's incredible.
Tears coming down my face. Yes, irreverent Hanukkah traditions in the Hoffman family.
That's tough to top.
Surely is.
Get it?
Is.
Top.
Ah, very good.
And
very
on good. That note.
Yes, that's Hoffman bringing down the conversation for everybody.
Good stuff.
We'll have a whole bunch more great holiday moments on the KVI Christmas Spectacular. Thanks for joining us.
Old Mr. Kringle is soon gonna jingle the bells that'll tingle all your troubles away. Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again.
The magic isn't over just yet. We'll be back with more of the KVI Christmas Spectacular after this.
Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again. He'll be prayers that you've made through the year, you'll get yours. If you've done everything you should, extra special good, he'll make this December the one you'll remember, the best and the merriest you ever did have. Everybody's waiting for the man with a bag. Christmas is here again.
the best and the merriest you ever did have.
We're not afraid to say it. Merry Christmas. Welcome back to the KVI Christmas Spectacular.
And one aspect of Christmas stems from the Seinfeld TV show and how they kind of morphed from Christmas to a whole other celebration at this time of year, known as Festivus.
A new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
And this has taken on a life of its own that comes up at this time of the end of the calendar year as everyone else celebrates a Hanukkah, celebrates Christmas, begins to celebrate New Year, and it kind of rolls into all of those things. But it has taken on a life of its own.
It was one of the, prior to having to argue Die Hard as a Christmas movie,
yeah.
It was one of those initial things you could just argue with your friends about. Well, I celebrate Festivus.
Right, exactly.
It's a Festivus for the rest of us.
So a chance to just kind of have a little fun, be a little sarcastic and things like that. But this emanates from the Seinfeld TV show and the dysfunction of Seinfeld's sidekick, George Costanza, and his father, Frank Costanza.
Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way.
What happened to the doll?
It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
It had to be some doll.
Yeah, right? That's the Kramer follow-up line there.
She was.
Yep. That, they use this scenario in the Seinfeld show to kind of get to this launching point for this gag on the show that's sort of taken on a life of its own from a pop culture standpoint. But that scenario, Frank Costanza, George Costanza's dad, describes, that has played out many a time in real life amid Black Friday shopping binges and things like that, where people are out trying to get the toy of the year and it's in short supply but high demand.
One of the things I've always appreciated about this made-up holiday, well, there's a backstory to the made-up holiday. We'll get to that in a second. But this made-up holiday in a TV show is it's not just something that's briefly referenced or mentioned. It's established throughout the episode. It has its own traditions. Its own.
They really put a lot of thought into this,
yeah,
surprisingly so, right?
In a 30-minute episode, they've packaged an entire belief system.
Yeah.
And I can certainly get behind it.
And you've got an example of the belief system that we keep here at the KVI studios by Zach's desk.
It's tabletop. I keep a tabletop Festivus pole.
Sort of in miniature, but.
Yeah, maybe about 12 inches tall. It's aluminum. It's a very high strength to weight ratio.
Yes, that's.
But
a
that's
big,
the
it's a big selling
the foundation
point.
Foundation of a Festivus.
The Festivus pole, not the Festivus tree.
Yeah, in lieu of a tree, you have a Festivus pole. It's just an aluminum pole, no tinsel.
Yes, that's.
And
distracting.
I find tinsel distracting.
That's distracting, according to Frank Costanza, and in the show, in the episode from Seinfeld, this whole idea of making it up even becomes a subplot within the episode.
I don't really celebrate Christmas.
George Costanza.
I celebrate Festivus.
Feminist.
Festivus, sir. And I was afraid that I would be persecuted for my beliefs. They drove my family out of Bayside, sir.
Suburban
New
York
City. You making
all
this up, too?
Oh, no, sir. Festivus is all too real, and I could prove it if I have to.
Yeah, you probably should.
And so there's George Costanza speaking to his boss, trying to get out of a little white lie he has told the boss, and now he's going to have to try and come correct on all of this. So idea that George doesn't want to have to admit to all of this, but he might have to.
Well, in addition to the Festivus pole being the central decor of a Festivus celebration, Phil, what else is necessary to properly...
There seem to be two big parts of it, and the first one is the airing of grievances.
The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
And so with that, there's, there's a certain inherent comedy in that we're going to complain to each other.
At the Festivus dinner, you gather your family around and tell them all the ways they have disappointed you this year.
Yeah, exactly. So, for good or ill, it sort of feels like therapy, but that can be beneficial in its own way. Rather than keeping everything bottled up inside, this is the time to share. You gotta share.
And there's only one way to conclude a Festivus celebration.
That's the next part. And the final part is the feats of strength. And then that turns into the physical comedy or the attempted physical comedy in the portion of the show.
And now that leads me to what I was talking about earlier, that this fake holiday does somewhat exist. One of the writers on Seinfeld, his dad did invent
it. Yeah.
Well, his dad actually did invent this holiday.
So kind of torn from real life
experience. Last name was O'Keefe, Daniel O'Keefe. It was a thing in his family. There were some different, aspects of it, but some of the actual aspects,
the
traditions of
the
their made-up holiday was the feats of strength. That was like the main factual, if you want to call it that, detail of the Daniel O'Keefe family holiday of Festivus.
And almost always, that's one of the things that comes up when it comes to movie writers, TV writers, comedy writers, things like that, any type of author.
Yeah.
You write what you know. And he ended up having that part of his younger years, and that's what he added to the equation for that Seinfeld episode.
It's a Festivus miracle!
Which also crazy that that guy knows that about himself. And he holds on to that little fact about this made-up holiday till season 9.
Yeah, exactly. They kind of sat on this, and it was one of the last episodes that they would have done.
Yeah, one of the other fun facts about the episode, Seinfeld always called it the whatever, you know?
Yes,
the,
every episode was named that.
Mm-hmm, and so this episode was not called The Festivus. And actually, it took me an embarrassing amount of time. My dad would always put it on every year. At Christmas time, we would watch.
Like the way we do with the Die Hard or other Miracle on 34th Street or Wonderful Life.
Radio business here who watches the WKRP Turkey Drop episode on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Thanksgiving.
So we always would watch this Festivus Seinfeld episode, but he would just put it on. He had the DVD and he'd write where it was or whatever. So I go through Netflix or wherever Seinfeld is these days streaming, and I cannot find the Festivus because it's called The Strike.
Oh, that's right, because of the H&H bagel strike for Kramer.
When they had produced this episode, they did not expect Festivus to become the
focus.
Commercial hit that it has. Yeah. Ironically, Festivus becoming a commercial holiday, in a sense. And so The Strike is about Kramer coming back from strike at a bagel shop after like 30 years. So that's the actual name of the episode. That's what they thought would be the lasting legacy of that bit.
Yeah, didn't even expect it to be the hit that it is. And that brings us to Kramer for the final word on Festivus.
Frank, no offense, but this holiday's a little out there.